169th Fighter Wing, and welcome to the June episode of Fox Chatter. We spent a lot of time last month talking about the schedule, so I'm going to spend a lot less on that today. We are going to spend a lot of time talking to Colonel Jim Roth. He's the Joint Force Headquarters J5 and recently deployed with the XAB as the Air Base Group Commander at Prince Sultan Air Base. So we'll get to him here shortly. I'm going to cover a few bits of news and then a couple of other items that are on my mind, and then we'll get to Colonel Roth. Like I said, we've talked about the schedule at length, so if you have any questions on that, not much has changed. I'd listened to last month's. A couple of other kind of pop-up things that are important to me. The college assistance program is open again. I talked about that a while ago, so I don't want to go into depth again, but remember, that is an enormous benefit that is incredibly underused and can pay for a lot of your college. If you have any questions, please go see Senior Master Sergeant Kenny Monroe. The enrollment for that is open from 1 June to 1 August, which is not as late as you want it to be. So just remember that. If you're looking for classes in the fall, 1 August is not as late as you want it to be, so you need to be proactive. So if you have any questions, if you are attending college and you're paying for any of it on your own, you need to go and talk to Kenny Monroe because he might be able to save you a lot of money. My next announcement is Honor Guard. Honor Guard is a wonderful thing that we do here on base. However, the numbers have been declining a bit, and they're looking for new membership. They are great patriotic Americans. They represent us incredibly well at ceremonies and at funerals, and they're just really valuable. So Master Sergeant Derek Hunter is our POC for that. If you are interested in being part of a sharply dressed, incredibly professional group of individuals that perform a very patriotic mission for people that are frequently in need of someone very professional at some of the most difficult times in their life, and you're willing to provide that service, you think you might be interested, please contact Derek. Last month, right before the podcast, we had a group of people out here known as the Information Aggressors. They were from Kansas, and this was General Rose's idea, and Colonel Thorne implemented it. I thought it was a great idea, and I strongly encouraged it, and Colonel Thorne ran with it and brought them out here, and almost none of you saw them, and what they did was test our security. You've heard me mention before that I grow concerned that the next time we have to deploy, it's going to be an opposed generation of forces from here. I don't think that our sanctuary of being in the middle of South Carolina is as safe as we would like it to be. That doesn't mean that I think a company of infantry is going to try to infiltrate the base, but I do think we are going to be opposed at some level by people trying to infiltrate our base, either electronically, with devices, or as small groups, or as individuals. And so the Information Aggressors came out here to test us. And I want to tell you that while we did not do everything perfectly, we did incredibly well, and I was really proud of our team. And essentially, what these Information Aggressors did was try various ways to penetrate the base, if they were able to get on the base, to get into buildings, to steal information. And I will tell you, we did a great job of stopping them and slowing them down. I fully expected to see pictures of them in my office, and I was very happy that didn't actually happen. They have a lot of tricks, and we, because of who we are, because of who you are, were able to put a huge speed bump in front of them. And it's primarily by all of you being who you are. So for example, how did we stop them? We stopped them because we're a family. We all know each other, and when we see someone who doesn't look right, even when they're in uniform, we question them. And frequently, we question them out of niceness, because we want to be helpful, and we would like to know if they could use some assistance. And then when it becomes obvious that they don't belong, we ask more questions, and then that leads to us taking the appropriate actions. At other times, it's pretty obvious that they're not lost, i.e. they end up in the flight line or out at a place where they shouldn't be, and then our people handle that with incredible professionalism. when our security forces were called in or noticed it themselves, they absolutely nailed it. Our security forces were top notch in this exercise against the information aggressors. And I couldn't be more proud of the way that they represented themselves, the way they defended their base, our base. You should feel very happy with them. And if you see one of them, tell them nice job, because they absolutely nailed it, both from protecting the perimeter to guarding our buildings to apprehending individuals, and their professionalism and skills were top notch. This is not just me saying it. I am telling you the words of the team lead from the information aggressors. That's all the great stuff. There is the lesson. If you were part of it, the lessons are ingrained in you. This person came in, maybe I let them get away with, you know, being in my building for 10 minutes longer than I should have, but I stopped them, and that lesson will stay with you forever. If you were not part of this, here's what I will tell you. We need to have a little bit of a sense of paranoia, probably isn't quite the right term, but awareness of who's in our buildings, who's around us. And we need to ask questions. And we also need to be aware of what's going on in the world. And if we were to ever get to a point where we are deploying again to a contested part of the world, we need to be on point. And our awareness and our senses need to be at a high level so that we can all be part of this team that would stop people from trying to infiltrate. And we need to absolutely make sure we don't have the mentality of, well, I don't really know what that person's doing, but it's not really my job to stop them. And I'm not saying we had that mentality, but that would be one that would really be painful. So take ownership of everything, take ownership of your area, where you work, and make sure that that you stop anyone who doesn't look like they belong. Because that is our first and most significant line of defense against someone trying to infiltrate our base. The next step is probably going to be a cyber attack from them. That one, I think, will be even more challenging for us, but that will be coming soon as well to see how our defenses do against them. So an absolute no-notice exercise that only less than the number of fingers I have on my hand, people knew about it coming into it, and it was an absolute, it was a great success and some great lessons learned moving forward. So that occurred late last month, and we'll keep looking to grow our ability to respond to these types of things moving forward. My other piece of news is, I've alluded to it for a while, and I'm really happy to say Caribbean Fox is a thing. It's happening. Mid-July is what we're looking at for that timeline, and it's going to stay about the same. It's going to be 9 days, no swap out, mid-July. We are taking 5 jets to St. Croix, and we're going to exercise some ACE concepts there. Much more information to follow, but I think I've alluded to this before. It's going to be a work medium, play medium. Well, you can play hard if you want. We're going to work some pretty, I would say, nice hours, but we're going to work hard within those hours. We want to get some great training objectives done. I think going to St. Croix is a PACOM representative, and we are going to have some great training objectives. We're going to cover some great operations for iteration of what we learned in our last exercise, and we're going to have a really good time while we're down there as well. Right now, we've been able to put together just enough money to make it happen. So we have a number of people that we're going to take with us, a little over 100, I believe. If we are able to get more money, we're going to grow it. So if you are not on the list right now, tell your supervisor, tell your commander, I want to be part of this. I want to grow my ACE skills, be a mission-ready airman, what we used to call multi-capable airman 2 months ago, another fad, right? But I want to grow myself in that way, and I'd love to be part of this trip. Super excited for this one. That about covers the news. A couple other items that I wanted to talk about, just because I haven't in the first however 8 or 9 of these that I've done, but are really important to us, so I think it's good to talk about, are one of them is the state partnership program. That is one of our missions, and I just got back from Bogota. I was there last week as part of an operator engagement talk, where basically the USAF and then the state partner get together with the country and talk about where that nation is at, how we can help, and how we can integrate. And I will tell you, I walked away from that week in Bogota with an increased appreciation for the state partnership program and what we mean to the country of Colombia. It's a lot. That is a nation, the Colombia, that has significant struggles with an insurgency that is funded by the drug trade, right? So that's the reason behind the drug trade and why it is because it generates money for the insurgency in that country. And they are incredible allies of ours. There are a lot of other nations that look to China to provide cheap resources and to grow their economy. The Colombians are incredibly loyal to us as Americans. And in fact, going back to the 1700s, Colombia was a nation before the United States and was actually the first nation to recognize the United States as an independent nation. So we owe them some loyalty as well. But they want to be better. They want to grow. They want to be better. And so one of the things I would like to grow is our partnership with them. And it's at all levels. It starts with airmen and NCOs, and I would say mostly NCOs in terms of their NCO development. I think you've heard me talk about it before, but I think our NCOs and our mid to high level enlisted are our strength compared to many of our adversaries. And in Colombia, that's something we need to help them strengthen. And then it goes from there to the operators, the pilots, and we're going to try to deepen our integration with them, especially. It looks like there's a decent chance of them purchasing some of our gently or not so gently used, but still with a lot of life on them, F-16s. And when I say ours, I do not mean South Carolina aircraft. I mean United States aircraft, probably Block 30s from another unit that are planned to retire. And so if that ends up happening, that will immediately exponentially increase our partnership with them and our ability to train them. So I mentioned that because if you ever look at some of the slides on what our missions are in South Carolina, our state partnership is one of them. And an example of the importance of the state partnership would be to look at Ukraine and California. When Russia initially invaded Ukraine, the United States had almost no way to communicate with the Ukrainian government because of the comm breakdowns. But the Ukrainians, specifically the Ukrainian Air Force, reached out directly to their counterparts in California via the incredible WhatsApp. And that was how they communicated. And that was how the United States reestablished relationships. And that was based on trust. And that's what the state partnership program has, is personal relationships, contacts in your phone of people you've met, emails of people that you give advice to and that you communicate and receive their advice from on how to operate. And that's the level we want to get to with the state partnership. And so I bring that up not because we have a specific event, you know, on our doorstep, though we are looking at a trip to Colombia about a year-ish from now. And I would encourage you, if you haven't been there, to go. It's a great experience, and it's one of our missions. My guest here today is Colonel Jim Roth. Jim is back from the recent deployment to Prince Sultan Air Base, where he was the Expeditionary Air Base Group Commander.
That's right.
Which they called basically the mayor of PSAB. Is that right?
Exactly. That's exactly what I was doing for the past 6 months.
Awesome. And so what did you think of the experience?
Oh, it was, Vito, it was fantastic. Your Swamp Fox team went downrange and just crushed it nonstop for 6 months. It was so exciting to be a part of it. I have, although I've been a Swamp Fox for more than 30 years now, had never had an opportunity to deploy with a big group of Swamp Fox, whether it was because of the role I was in here or there or the timing along the way, I just had never had that opportunity. So I jumped at the opportunity and never regretted it for a second. The Swamp Fox were on fire over there. And obviously, things got very exciting once we got there. It made the time go very, very quickly. And I honestly can't believe we're already back. It was awesome.
It did go by really quick, though it seemed like one of those ones where sometimes the weeks would drag on, and then next thing I knew, it was like, man, we're talking about them coming home already. But yeah, glad to have you guys back, and excited to hear all the stories. Everyone is anxious to know things like, how did you feel like the wing's role, our role, fit into the region, and what was going on? Because obviously, it was a very electric time. In terms of geopolitics.
Yes. Yeah. We the way that General Quadri liked to phrase it is we left home in competition and we arrived in conflict, straight into crisis almost. And, we went over there expecting our mission to be, we would arrive, we would make sure that our presence was known, and we would go to work on continuing to move PSAB from a bare base to a semi-permanent installation. We would focus on things like partner nation integration. These are the kinds of things that we thought we would be spending our time doing. And then literally the day before my change of command, when I assumed command of the group, is when the attack on Israel occurred. And all of a sudden, literally just, you know, a week and a half after we arrived, the whole thing changed overnight. So got real exciting, real fast. We were not even all there at the point that those attacks occurred. We were still about halfway through our transition. So folks were literally showing up and saying, wait, what's happening now? It got pretty intense very quickly.
So on previous podcasts, I've talked about the Iranian-aligned militia groups and the Houthis down in Yemen. Obviously, they were more spun up after the crisis in Israel kicked off and in Gaza. How did that event and how did the militia groups and the Houthis, how did that affect your day-to-day operations?
Yeah, so you're right. What you're describing, if you picture it geographically, we had threats or at least serious geopolitical very complicated, complex situations almost in every cardinal direction from where PSAB is located.
Yes.
PSAB right in the heart of Saudi Arabia, Saudi Arabia right in the heart of the AOR. So to the north, Iraq and Syria, you know, over, you know, down below us, the Houthis started becoming a thing midway through October.
Yes.
That caught us off guard. The fact that they were stirring up the ruckus that they have stirred up and continued to stir up in the Red Sea was complicated further by the politics between the Houthis and Saudi Arabia, our hosts. That made what we could and couldn't do and the role that we had to play a little bit complicated. We were right in the middle of that. That entire dynamic was literally popping off in every direction.
So did you feel like you and the base had to pivot from those partner relationships and sustaining the base to reacting or trying to get ahead of the threats that were surrounding you?
I wouldn't describe it as a pivot because despite the fact that we did slightly switch gears when things changed overnight for us and we went into a mode where we were now suddenly having to prepare the base for a possible surge, we're now going to potentially increase our footprint here by up to 5 or 6 times as many airmen, soldiers, and civilians. We're immediately making those kinds of preparations. We're hot into emergency management, obviously, and suddenly helping all of our first-time deployers know where to go when the siren goes off, what they need to do once they get into a bunker, how to maintain accountability, all of these kinds of things. We're refreshing the entire team on those types of operations. But the PNI, the partner nation integration, all the other things that you listed continued. We did not stop doing any of those other things. We were just now doing them in a very intense and dynamic environment.
So how did that affect everyone? Because that sounds to me, I hear that and I think that's a lot of extra work. People are a lot busier. That is very difficult to sustain over the course of months. So how did you and the team manage that?
Probably communication. I mean, the fact that you and I are sitting here in front of these microphones suggests that you already know what I know. And that is that the key to almost any dynamic operating environment, in our case, the most austere airbase in the region, the historic transition to the XAB, the whole AOR going nuts around us, competing priorities, that complexity, the key is communication. The confident, empathetic leadership and deliberate, thoughtful communication. I'd also say, honestly, we benefited every day from the fact that the XAB construct allowed us to populate most of our key leadership positions with Guard leaders, specifically Swamp Fox. The Guard DNA was our secret sauce. That professionalism, the commitment to sustainment, to long-term over the horizon impact, the Guard's long game mindset, that infinite game mindset, its maturity, age and experience, its creative, sometimes maverick problem solving. It's the diversity of perspectives that our Guard members bring to the table, often from their civilian jobs. It's their ability to build and leverage partnerships, thanks to things like the State Partnership Program, and the fact that we collaborate routinely with our Army brothers and sisters, that jointness. That's the chemistry that got us through this. And it didn't hurt that you sent an incredible lineup of Swamp Fox leaders. My deputy was Lieutenant Colonel Torrance Barbour from the Security Forces Squadron, crushed it. My senior enlisted leader was Chief Aaron Cheney from Maintenance, phenomenal. I had Flash Fleischer and Chief Rector running CE with Gary Bollier as their first shirt. I had James Merriman and Chief Campbell running the medical squadron, Mike Adams over LRS with Matt Rinaldi and LaShonda Simon. I had Boards Kaminsky running the OSS. I had Chief Rose Wingate as my SEL for force support, Victoria West as the comm squadron first sergeant. So, you know, it was the all-stars. Even the A staff was Guard heavy. The deputy chief of staff was a Swamp Fox. The senior enlisted leader, Hannah Connor, Swamp Fox, the A1, their first shirt. You really did send the all-stars with us on this trip. They were everywhere. And to no one's surprise, really, especially not mine, they made the difference.
Yeah, that makes sense. The other thing that I saw, and this is, you know, me casting my impression upon you, but I would see pictures from Christmas events and I think, boy, I bet you those morale events really helped and kept people focused and got them together. And I would imagine that doing things like that was a real requirement just to remind people of the normalcy of life as well.
Absolutely. You're right. Being there through the holidays can present challenges, but it also became sort of a rallying point for us as well. It was exactly as you've just described, an opportunity for fellowship and an opportunity to pull everybody together.
I loved seeing the smiling faces, and that made me feel better about how everyone was doing. My next question here is put you on the spot a little bit, and I know it's probably difficult to do, but was there any singular event or story or incident that really sticks out in your mind as like, boy, this one really was an important event, or this one really is one that I'm going to remember forever, or that, you know, that was a significant occurrence?
Absolutely. I think for me, the defining moment was probably the 19th of October when the alarms went off and we were suddenly all running for the bunkers. Again, this is happening about midway through our transition. We barely have our feet on the ground, and it just immediately communicated, obviously in a very dramatic way, just what the situation was that right. We had all found ourselves in. And it was unifying. It brought everybody together, as sometimes something that frightening and shocking and unexpected can do. And from that moment on, it just brought clarity to, you know, why we were there, what we were doing. And that moment will forever be seared into my memory.
Yeah, I'm sure. I can think about some of those times when you're taking fire, and whether it ends up being reality or not reality, it still has the same impact on your mind. And it's a shared experience with everyone that kind of galvanizes the group.
You know, it was just awe-inspiring, really, to me. So impressive to see the way that even our young first-time deployers responded to the way things were changing on a daily basis.
One of the things you keep mentioning is our people over there. Many of us, when we've deployed, if we're in the aviation package, we're used to being with a lot of Swamp Fox, but we're still very insulated. We're our own operation. I don't think any of us have ever deployed with a large number of Swamp Fox, but spread out amongst many organizations. How did our people do, kind of by themselves, but generally in leadership roles? What was that like?
Yeah, so the XAB, the Expeditionary Air Base construct, did exactly that. It allowed us the opportunity to bring, around 130 Swamp Fox to PSAB. But of course, we're part of a much bigger machine, 2,500 people usually on average on the base on any given day. I, in the Air Base group, had nine squadrons that belonged to me, seven of which had Swamp Fox in them. So you're right. The whole organization was peppered with Swamp Fox, whether you were in CE, Security Forces, LRS, the public affairs team, the chaplains, there were Swamp Fox everywhere. I didn't go anywhere without seeing a Swamp Fox.
How did we fit in with the active duty? How did we bind with them, either in charge or falling under their command or leadership?
It was quite fascinating to be at an installation that was about 70% guard. So we were the majority, which was unusual. That's a unique dynamic, obviously. In fact, at one of our first newcomers orientations where General Quadri was speaking to a bunch of folks who had just arrived, a couple hundred people who had gathered together in the sort of the recreation hall, and he asked everybody to raise their hands, who's guard, who's active duty. All the hands went up for guard and then went down, and then a couple active duty hands went up. And
oh, that's awesome.
You could look on their faces like, wait, what is happening now?
That's how we usually feel.
Exactly. but we crushed it. You know, what the guard brings, you know, we brought all the guard superpowers to the table. And I think that in many, I'm not exaggerating when I say that every week I would talk to an active duty person who was having their first experience like this, where they were surrounded by so many guardsmen and were learning on a daily basis so much about the guard construct and the way that we do business, and were impressed by, and in fact, quite a few thinking about perhaps crossing over and joining our ranks now that they had become educated by this experience.
We need to say it 100%. One of the things that, if you haven't already noticed, Jim, since we've been back, but if you haven't, you probably have because you're you, but that Agile Combat Employment, or ACE, has become something really important to us here, and that we've been hitting pretty hard the last 6 months. I know it is different the way it is used in UCOM, PACOM, CENTCOM. What were your experiences with ACE? And I bring that out because I think everyone who's been practicing it here is probably interested to know, like, well, how is it being used in the real world? What was it like in CENTCOM with ACE? What did you guys do with that?
Right. So ACE was certainly one of the mission types or skill sets that we expected to be practicing quite a bit while we were there.
So the expectation was that you hit the ground running ACE capable.
Well, the expectation was for, and what we had told the leaders who had been able to get together a few times prior to our actual deployment, was that this is a concept that we are going to actively exercise as often as we're able while we're in the AOR. So we showed up expecting to practice ACE, to exercise ACE. And we did that quite a few times. But what we quickly realized, and it intensified our need to and desire to exercise that as much as possible, was we were suddenly in the middle of this very dynamic environment. There were threats in every direction. The strategic need to rapidly and temporarily relocate to another location when we have the Houthis at the back door and Iran at the front door and were literally surrounded became a very real thing. So we did exercise it quite a few times. We'd send 50 or 60 people, say, over to Jeddah, where they would, station themselves at a small Royal Saudi Air Force base for a couple days. One of our KC-135s went along on that trip. KC-135 from the Deed joined them there. They set up shop for a couple days, flew the ATO during those 2 days that they were there, and then packed everything up and came home. So those kinds of rapid muscle movements, we did exercise that. Boards, our friend Boards, Lieutenant Colonel Kaminsky, who was my Operations Support Squadron commander, did a phenomenal, innovative, inventive job of creating
A specialty.
It is for sure the board superpower. But he found this tiny tactical runway that no one ever used, not far from where we were operating, and used it to stage 3, 4, 5 different ACE-like exercises where we would ACE airmen from our living area in Opstown over to this tiny runway, airfield operations, night vision goggles, unloading aircraft, loading aircraft. He'd have bad guys attacking them while they were there. They'd set up tents, tear down tents, come back home. The whole concept was exercised multiple times by Boards and his folks, just as sort of an extracurricular sort of addition to our training regimen. And then, you know, in the real world, there are at least peripheral examples where, you know, we've got a few of our jets in Bahrain for an air show. All of a sudden, it's the eve of Operation Poseidon Archer, where we're going to, where the U.S. is going to strike into Yemen. And our guys who are at Bahrain suddenly need to relocate up to MSAB in Jordan, which is and was ended up being a very ace-like sort of quick reaction, sure. Move, relocate, get there, camp out for a couple of days to cover down for those guys, and then come back home. So what you are doing here at the Wing and what the Wing continues to practice more and more realistically, keep going. It never wasn't something that we were thinking about the entire 6 months that we were there.
Yep. And that's my feeling, is this is here to stay. This is not, there are many things that the Air Force does that could probably be put in the category of a style of the moment or a fad. But my instincts tell me that ACE and being spread apart and being able to be more difficult to hit by the enemy is something that's going to stay with us for a while, because the world is only becoming a more dangerous place. And the proliferation of weapons that can reach out and grab us is really all over the place. A couple episodes ago, we talked about the Houthis, and I'm kind of amazed that a place as economically depressed as that can still have as advanced weapons as they have, which tells me the threats are everywhere and we need to be prepared to be on the move. How about the leadership on those ACE things? That's one of the things that we've talked about developing a lot, is basically, hey, leadership needs to get delegated significantly, and our mid-level individuals, whether that's the E ranks or the O's, need to be able to kind of capture the moment and seize the initiative with leadership. What did you see in that regard to ACE? Was that an easy transition? Is it a growth thing? Do people enjoy that? Are they you know, jump on it, or is it a little bit more like, hey, we got to be practicing that extensively?
Well, it's both. I mean, it's obviously an exciting opportunity, but it also is extremely intimidating for a young captain to suddenly find himself responsible for taking 50 airmen downrange. And, you know, we sever communications with them. We yes. ask them to figure it out. As an example, I mentioned previously our trip that some of our folks went to Jeddah. The aircraft started breaking. There were maintenance issues. They weren't able to, you know, there were issues with their ability to take care of the mission when they were trying to focus on some of the logistics of transportation. You know, things started coming undone and breaking apart. And
And
we were pretty set in our ways, as, you know, the leadership team back home would just kind of watch from the sidelines and give them an opportunity to figure it out. They were sent forward with an understanding and with clear words from the boss that, hey, stuff's going to go wrong. And that's okay. You'll figure it out.
I love that mentality. It is difficult sometimes as one of the more senior leaders to let that happen, though, and we have to. We're going to try to impart some of those same lessons and scenarios later this summer with Caribbean Fox. You should come down there and join us. It might even be a good time, too, but it'll definitely be good training.
Yeah.
So I could talk to you all day, Jim, but what I do want to do is stop with my questions and just give you an opportunity. Are there any other things that you experienced over there over the last 6 months that you think everyone would like to know about, or lessons or stories or any of the above?
Well, we haven't talked a lot about the XAB concept, which, you know, the writing's on the wall, and I think that may or may not be a thing for much longer. But with, you know, with the deployable combat wing yes. concept coming, it's not much of a stretch to see that as sort of an expansion or iteration of the same idea. The idea being that with the XAB, we stepped away from the idea of crowdsourcing these big deployments to a certain extent, and sending teams downrange, existing teams, as we did with our Swamp Fox, our friends from Utah that shared the lead wing responsibility with us. Yep. So the ability to arrive as a functioning, competent, cohesive team obviously just speeds things up. You more quickly are able to get to a point where you're moving at the speed of trust and familiarity.
Yes.
So that was certainly unique about this deployment. And I think as we look ahead to the way that the Air Force is sort of reimagining the way that we deploy, I think it was still an extremely relevant experience for the 130-ish Swamp Fox that participated. And so I would just encourage those who weren't able to make this trip to discuss with the folks who did go downrange what their experience was like and how that impacted them. What, you know, if they had it all to do all over again, what changes would they make as we began anticipating this continued movement in that direction? I just felt like it was an extremely relevant mission.
I couldn't agree more. And I'm going to use this as a segue, actually. I think, as I alluded to, I think there are fads, and I think the term XAB may go away and will go away, but the concept behind it of running an airbase and bringing a group over and being an A staff and being a group of leaders that deploys in a capacity to run a base is absolutely going to stay with us. And then the other thing I really was interested in and has been on my mind of late is you talking about the experiences that you and your team had over there. And I've felt this way and started talking about it at the commander's meetings of, I think it is really important for all of us to look for opportunities to expand our horizons. We need to get off base. And the more senior in rank you are, the easier it's going to be. But there are going to be opportunities. Next summer, there's an exercise called Refor Pack that is going to be a massive exercise out in the Pacific. And we certainly hope to send some agile combat support units to that. And I would encourage everyone, and this is open to any rank, to be a part of that. You want to expand your horizons. We want to be in more exercises, and it can't always be as a unit. And so to some extent, we all need to feel an individual responsibility to improve ourselves and be ready to go. I'm going to be going in about a week and a half to an exercise in the Pacific for 2 weeks because I want to bring back a little bit of knowledge for both myself and the wing on how they are going to operate over there. And so I strongly encourage everyone to look for those opportunities when you see those emails, whether it's from myself or someone, to think about, does this exercise fit me? Can I get better from this? Can I expand my horizons? Can I make myself more ready? Jim, any parting shots? Any other words?
Two things. One, this podcast is fantastic. I mean, just congratulations to you, Vito, and to Public Affairs for making this happen. The information that you're sharing, the awareness, the context, your sincerity and candor, it's just, I think, an invaluable addition to the way that we communicate with our members. And I would say to everyone who might be listening right now, tell everyone else to do the same thing. Continue to spread the word and let people know about this. I mean, what a fantastic thing to come into Drill Weekend, just totally spun up, current, and ready to rock. Thanks to you guys and congratulations for introducing such a great tool. And then I would echo what you just said, Vito, and that is raise your hand. Look for those opportunities, the courses, the conferences, the TDYs, the deployments. You know, it won't all be perfect. Some of it will suck. Nope. There will be challenges, but you will come back stronger and more capable and fired up and ready to do more great work, just like the 130-ish Swamp Fox that just got back from PSAP.
Totally. Thank you for sharing your time. Thanks for the experiences. I'm looking forward to chatting more over a beverage or two and hearing more about the experiences, and glad to have you and the team back home, Jim.
Awesome. Thanks, Vito.
That leads me to my last thing today, which is shout outs. We just got back from Century Savannah. I talked about this a while ago, but when we did our exercise in March, our ACE exercise, that was primarily logistics and maintenance, but the operator side of it was not necessarily as robust as we needed it to be. And Century Savannah was that other part. That was for the pilots to go down there and exercise with other fifth gen F-22 and F-35 aircraft and train against an incredibly advanced threat. So if you were to take what we did in March from a maintenance and logistics standpoint and agile combat employment, combine it with Century Savannah, and you have one overall great exercise. So I feel like we kind of put the bow and finished what we wanted to do in terms of our training for the first wave of it. And it was a great exercise. And the first thing I want to say in terms of shout outs is maintenance absolutely nailed it down in Savannah, generating 100% of the missions, taking care of our aircraft and sheltering them when a storm hit, and being the only unit that could pull the aircraft out of hangars and fly a complete first go the next morning. Swamp Fox standard. Nice job, brothers and sisters. My next shout out, I think I want to say it one more time. I already told in the information aggressors how great our security forces did. I also want to specifically mention, not in security forces, in vehicle management, Senior Master Sergeant Tony Lever for doing a great job apprehending people that were not where they were supposed to be. So once again, security forces across the board nailed it. I also want to talk, now I'm looping back to Century Savannah a little bit, but in addition to the, just the generation there, we also had a number of troops down there that were practicing the, instead of multi-capable airmen now, the new word is mission-ready airmen. We had three in particular that I'd like to mention, and those were Tech Sergeant Austin Sultan, Tech Sergeant Jarvis Colvin, and Senior Airman Jonathan Wolverton. Awesome job, guys. Really appreciate what you did. Century Savannah was put together by Major Luke Waymuller. SAC, great job with that. Really appreciate all the work that you put in to make that happen, to make it both a great deal and a great training opportunity in the same vein of what we're trying to do with Caribbean Fox this summer. And then finally, the last thing to talk about is, I haven't talked about the Med Group at all. They did an exercise known as Med Flag while Century Savannah was going on, and I dropped by there, and it was awesome. Med Flag was a great exercise. Lieutenant Zechariah Palmisano was the POC for that, and he helped arrange Prisma Health and a number of other providers throughout the area to come in and share their training with our providers, and then basically, we trained civilians and civilians trained us in terms of how we would do emergency medical care, how we would transport patients out, and all of us got better from it. It was a really enjoyable thing for me to watch. I listened in on some of it, and I could never be a doctor because it was just beyond my ability to comprehend, and also just seeing even fake blood, I didn't dig it much. But it gave me another, as always, appreciation for our medical professionals and what they do. So thanks, Lieutenant Palmisano, for putting that together. And Beav, great job with the concept of this in year two. And I know you're just going to keep growing it and making us better. That's exactly the kind of stuff that we need to do. So that about wraps it up for me. We got family day this weekend and then a good fly day on Sunday. Like I mentioned, I'm off to an exercise starting on Sunday, but I'll see you all on family day and looking forward to that. Please bring your family, bring your friends out, and we'll see you all Saturday.